We are back. This is 20VC with me, Harry Stebbings, and I cannot believe it, but it's been 5 years of 20VC, and we finally have our first guest on the show from LATAM, and I could not have asked for a better first guest. And so with that, I'm thrilled to welcome Simon Barrero, founder and CEO at Rappi, to the hot seat today. Now, as for Rappi, Rappi is the startup that has become a cornerstone of the Latin American mobile ecosystem, coined as the next everything store of Latin America, and to date, Simon has raised over $1.7 billion for the company, from the likes of Sequoia Capital, Andreessen Horowitz, SoftBank, DST, Y Combinator Continuity Fund, and more. Prior to Rappi, though, Simon was also the founder of multiple former companies, including Imaginamos, a software studio who grew to over 300 people. And I do also have to say a huge thank you to Anu at YC Continuity Fund for the intro and some fantastic question suggestions today. I really do so appreciate it, Anu, and the show wouldn't have happened without you. But before we dive into the show today, did you know that more than 80% of US public stock is owned by just 10% of Americans? This divide is even greater in the private markets. Carta makes it as easy to issue equity to your employees as it is to issue payroll, and for employees, as easy to accept it too. More than 16,000 companies issue equity to their employees through Carta. Whether you're just getting started or getting ready to go public, the team at Carta can help. Check them out at carta.com. And then another incredible product you have to introduce is SecureFrame. SecureFrame helps companies get enterprise ready by streamlining SOC 2 and ISO 27001 compliance. SecureFrame allows companies to get compliant within weeks rather than the painful months that it is today. Join companies like Stream, Hasura, Benepass, and unlock more sales with SecureFrame. And 20VC listeners get 10% off at secureframe.com/20VC. And finally, I've always been a big history fan, and so I want to talk about Cooley, the global law firm built around startups and venture capital. Since forming the very first venture fund in Silicon Valley, Cooley's formed more venture capital funds than any other law firm in the world, with 50 plus years working with VCs. They help VCs form and manage funds, make investments, and handle the myriad of issues that arise throughout a fund's lifetime. So to learn more about the number one most active law firm representing VC-backed companies going public, head over to Cooley.com and also check out CooleyGo.com. But enough from me, and now time to dive into the show, and I'm so thrilled to welcome Simon Barrero, founder and CEO at Rappi. 3, 2, 1, 0.
You have now arrived at your destination.
Simon, it is such a joy to have you on the show today. I've heard so many good things from Anu and also from Ulas at Streamline. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Harry.
But I do want to start with a little bit on you. So tell me, you know, we see the behemoth that is Rappi today, but how did it start and what was that founding moment for you with Rappi?
Yeah, Rappi started 5 years ago. We were working in a B2B startup called Rappility, where we licensed software to the largest supermarkets all around the world. And we were seeing that users were super happy with the experience inside the app, but not with the logistics, and they hated groceries that take 24 hours or 48 hours to get there. So we said, hey, why don't we try to do everything ourselves via this on-demand model? We started in a small neighborhood in corner shops delivered in 20 minutes, and that was it. That was all Rappi. So we started. We thought it was going to be amazing. We had no users, so we had to go to the streets, and we actually started giving away donuts for downloads. And that's how we started to gain traction in a very small neighborhood in Bogota. And we started not only acquiring users, but of course, giving away donuts to them gave us the opportunity to listen to them. And they started asking for a lot of more stuff. And that's why Rappi started to have also restaurants, pharmacy, and everything that it has today.
I mean, I absolutely love that. Can I ask, when did you know it was working? When you were giving out donuts? Or at what point were you like, this is working?
Yeah, at the beginning, we raised money from friends and family, and they asked me, okay, for how long is this money going to be enough? And my honest answer was, if we kill it, I'm going to need money very soon again. And if it's not working, I think this money is going to be good for a while. After a month and a half of launch, I was asking my investors to give me more money. So in that moment, I think that we were all getting into the idea that this was going to be big.
I love it. I love the fact that if it does well, you need more money. And if it doesn't, you're fine, actually. Can I ask, you mentioned there about being very strict on your zones that you started with. How important think it is to have very tight geographic boundaries when you're starting something like Rappi.
Yeah, super important, because this business has hyper-local network effects. You need to make a specific user fall in love with your service. So that specific user in a specific neighborhood in Bogota or in Sao Paulo, she or he gives a shit if you have 100,000 restaurants in other cities. She or he only cares about the important restaurants in that neighborhood and that the service is amazing in that neighborhood. And for that, you have to have a lot of density in terms of numbers of merchants and couriers concentrated in a small radius for the service to be great. So if you started to launch all around, you would have a crappy service with not an amazing offer or assortment for users. And I think that's what Rappi did well at the beginning. We focused in very small zones until we got fans. And after we cracked that zone and we cracked that unit economics, then we went to the following zone.
Can I ask, before we talk about the fans, what did cracking unit economics look like? Is that like breaking even on every order? What was cracking it for you?
Yeah, cracking unit economics was breaking even in every order. And it has a lot to do with the efficiency of the fleet. So how many orders per hour can a courier deliver in a certain zone? That's key.
Got you. How do you drive efficiency on the driver side to deliver as many as possible? And what is that kind of break-even number in terms of the amount of drops?
So for us, in America, it's two. If you're doing two orders per hour, you're good. And it's all about concentration of restaurants and CPG stores in a certain microzone and concentration of users. So to get the flywheel moving, you have a lot of users ordering from a lot of restaurants that are very near from them. So if you're a courier, your delivery time goes down because users are very near to the restaurants and they can go and deliver one order and then pick up the next one very close to where they delivered that past order, and everything starts to work well.
Can I ask, you mentioned donuts for downloads on the consumer side. It's a new model for restaurants to adopt as well. So how did the restaurant adoption process look for you?
It was hard, mostly for the premium restaurants, because they didn't conceive the idea of their amazing plates traveling in a bag of someone riding a bike, because these chefs put so much energy and love into it. Each detail that for them it was almost impossible. So we had to work with them and work in the packaging. I remember that we used to do trials. So we went and we pick up the food and then we delivered the food and we took the temperature of the food and we checked every detail and we videotaped that, then go back to the chef. And it was super hard. But thankfully, it's now obvious that you can order from a Michelin star restaurant and with good packaging, you can have a fabulous meal at home.
Totally agree with you in terms of that. I've had Alfred Lin from Sequoia, one of your investors, on the show. And when we spoke about DoorDash recently, me and him on the show, he said that chasing GMV can really make for bad habits and bad behaviors. What did you measure as your North Star metric in the early days? Was it GMV or was it another metric?
For us, the key metric has been frequency of use, because we're a multi-vertical app. And what makes Rappi amazing is to be able to really make your life better, not only with restaurants, but with pharmacy, with diapers, with liquors, with anything you want. If you want to change your shirt, you can send a courier to Zara and get a new shirt. So it's everything that is in your city in minutes. And frequency is that north metric for us that shows that users are using us and seeing us as we think that they should. So users that use Rappi one or two times per month are not yet engaged as they should. Power users that order 20 times per month are what shows that we are doing a good job.
Okay, I totally get it. You mentioned there the diversity of products that you serve in terms of diapers or shirts or food. The question I have, and Ulas at Streamlined asked this too, how do you know when's the right time to expand your product offering? Because it's one thing to do food, but to do diapers and pharmacy and clothes is another. How did you know you were okay to expand the product offering?
For us, it was just listening to users. Because again, Rappi wasn't an amazing idea from any of the founders. Rappi launched as only groceries on demand, but then we were lucky enough, we had a blank field where users could order anything. And that blank field started to become for us a great way of listening to users and move fast and get them what they wanted. So they started asking for restaurants. We got an order from a user in this blank field that said, hey, I need the equivalent in pesos of $100. And I need it in my house because I need to pay someone. And any other company, I believe, at least in Latin America, would say, okay, this is a joke. Let's don't look at that and let's continue working. After 48 hours after reading that message, we implemented an on-demand ATM where users could order the equivalent to $100 or $200 and a courier will deliver the cash for them. Latin America, everyone uses cash. We would deliver cash for them in 15 minutes to their home or to a restaurant or whatever. And that grew amazingly well. It became 5% of our orders in year two. So it was about listening to users and moving fast. So to be super clear, when was the right time? When users started asking for it.
I love it. And I love the way I had a schedule and we just completely left it behind. But this is so interesting. The final kind of part of it is we've had the consumers, downloads for donuts. We've got the restaurants, which I love, and the service providers. In terms of the drivers, in London in particular, I know that your deliveries and many of the big competitors struggle on driver acquisition. How did you approach driver acquisition and what worked well for you?
Yeah, here is the opposite. We don't struggle at all because there's a lot of unemployment in Latin America and underemployment also. So these are a lot of people that either they don't have a job or have a job that pays less than the legal minimum wage. So there's a lot of people looking for opportunities. And most of our couriers are students, are paying their careers because of working a weekend in Rappi. And there's another very important point for Latin America, and it's that if you connect and do orders for an hour in Rappi, you'll earn, in average, twice the minimum wage of Latin America. So that's very different to Europe, where sometimes it's kind of the same, but not with benefits, and there's this big issue. Here, these guys are making twice the equivalent to twice of the minimum wage per hour. Of course, they are independent contractors. They can connect and disconnect at any time. But the amazing thing, Harry, is that in countries like Colombia, 70% of the population, 70%, earn less than two minimum wages per hour. So we are unfortunately poor countries. So it's an amazing opportunity. And we have thousands and thousands of stories of guys that had paid for school, guys that have learned how to code and now work in startups coding because they had this opportunity. People that have paid for the education of their family. So it's super powerful for us. And it's something that gives us a lot of purpose to be able to give these opportunities in Latin America.
Man, that's amazing. I mean, you must be very proud when you see people graduate and do things like that. I do want to touch on the funding though, because you mentioned it earlier in terms of if it goes well, you know, you'll need more money quickly.
Yeah.
Go very well. And, you know, I spoke to Anu before the show from YC, and she said, no, and she meant it nicely, no one thought Rappi could raise this much capital sitting in LATAM. So she said, how did you do it? And why do you think you succeeded so well?
So a lot of things. People always ask me, because we've raised a lot of money, so they ask me, hey, what's tips? Or, and the real answer is, you have to understand in what game you're playing. And this game is called growth. And what's important for early stage investors is number one, growth. Number two, growth. Number three, growth. And that's it. We were growing like hell. And that made it easy because we went to a meeting and American investors say, it's like, oh shit, like we love the team. We love the mission. We love the traction. But this feels very far from us. This is like, oh, Bogota is the same as Zimbabwe. Or it's like super far away from what's normal for Americans. But traction and growth made them say, like, we're going to follow this. We had amazing cohorts and our dollar retention is world class. DoorDash just published their dollar retention cohorts and are amazing. Rappi's are twice as good as them because of the multi-vertical approach. So the numbers speak by themselves and that's what really helped us accelerate and be able to fundraise.
I'm totally with you. I hear so many like what are the tips? And you're like, fuck tips. It's about numbers and growth. So I'm totally with you there. Can I ask, I heard that the Sequoia story is a really interesting one. So Sequoia led the A round. How did that come together? And how did Sequoia come to invest in the Series A? What's the story there?
Yeah, lots of stories there. But to tell you a funny anecdote, we were at another investor and we had the partner meeting in Sequoia. And we're at another investor very close by in Palo Alto. But we were very tight. We tried to order a car and there were no cars available. So we had started like jogging to the meeting, but we were not going to make it. And then a truck, like a sewage truck, stopped by and we tell him, hey, please help us, take us to the meeting. And it was a Latin American guy, so we made a great connection. And the guy took us to the meeting and this big sewage truck said, service you can trust. And we got to the front door of Sequoia in that truck and we have a beautiful photo with the truck. And we got there in time for the partner meeting, so it was super stressful. But then thankfully, it went well and we made it.
I mean, it went incredibly well. You made it and you also got the check from them. I guess a question that I have is like, when you do raise a lot of money, it takes a little bit of a mindset shift in terms of how you allocate the capital that you've raised. Was that a difficult mindset shift for you to make in terms of suddenly having a lot more money? And how did you embrace that?
Yeah, first of all, with a lot of responsibility, because we were the first ones to be raising these amounts of money in Latin America. And we knew that if we fucked up, there wasn't going to be a lot of money for the continent. So a lot of responsibility, not only from us, but from all of the team. And of course, we've made a lot of mistakes. But the right mindset for us has been, it's all about building long-term value. So if you can spend a lot of money today to accelerate acquisition of high value users, don't spend that money in 3 months. If you have the opportunity to bring them all in 1 month, go for it, because these companies are expensive companies to run. And every single month of burn, you never get that money back. So that mindset of let's bring all of that future value as fast as we can, it has been like the mindset for us.
Totally get you in terms of kind of building that long-term value. Can I ask, you mentioned growth, 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 and I'm totally with you in terms of the emphasis there. There is a time when it has to switch to more profitability or a bigger focus on unit economics. How do you think about growth versus profitability in unit economics? And when does that switch happen, do you think? And yeah, where are you now as well?
That's a very good point, Harry. And it's growth, growth, growth when you've cracked unit economics. If you haven't cracked unit economics, it's unsustainable to scale. So you have to crack unit economics and then go as fast as you can, knowing that you're going to be burning a lot of money to grow. The perfect analogy for Rappi is think about like a store for a coffee shop. You open a coffee shop and you make it work. So you are making money in that coffee shop. So then you go to an investor and you tell him, hey, I want to scale faster. In the past, you had to wait till you made a lot of money in that one store. And with the savings of that store, you go and open the second and the third store. But then today, of course, you go to an investor and you tell them, hey, look at this store. Look at this beautiful retention. Look at this beautiful economics of this one store, I want to do 100. And then they give you money to do 100. And you start the other stores. And of course, building those stores and putting the furniture of those stores costs you a lot of money. So people tell you, hey, you're crazy. You're burning money. What about the economics? It doesn't make sense. No, dude, relax. Look at my economics in the zones that I'm already mature. I know how to replicate this. I'm just opening more stores. And I have to wait until I have finished remodeling the stores, let's say, for me to earn money in these other stores. That's the analogy.
Can I ask a kind of detailed question? It's like, when you think about zone maturity, how long does it take to get to zone maturity today? And how has that changed over time?
Yeah, it takes about 3.5 months. It's not more than that.
Has it changed over time a lot? Was it much longer?
At the beginning, it was 4 months. It wasn't that different. It depends on how you spread the investment. So if you go and open 10 zones, but to open 10 zones, you're putting a bit less money in each, then it'll take a bit longer. But if you open 10 zones and you put the same investment than when you were opening only one at a time, you get there in the same 3.5 months.
3.5 months is incredible. I'm surprised at the speed. That's fantastic.
To be clear, Rappi is unit economic profitable globally. So in 9 countries that we operate. So it's not acceptable for us. And I think for anyone in this world now to have negative unit economics.
It's interesting. But you mentioned the 9 countries. With every country expansion, there's always competitors. And it is a competitive market. How do you think about the right way to analyze competition today? And how do you think about competition?
Yeah, so we're super grateful about competition because, for example, 5 years ago, we used to send the courier to the restaurant to place the order in the restaurant. So, of course, that's not the most efficient way. They had to drive to the restaurant, order, and wait for 15 minutes until the burger was cooked. Thanks to competition and to Uber Eats, for example, they came and, of course, they had already the tablets for restaurants and they sent the order and the restaurant accepted the order and we had nothing when they landed. So thanks to them, we accelerated in so many ways that made our service a lot better. And it's great to have good competitors because you're always moving faster and faster. And there's a saying in Latin America that you run as fast as the Doberman that is running behind you. And that's life. So we have a lot of Dobermans running behind us. So yeah, for us, we see it as energy and fuel to improve.
Can I ask, when I hear you speak today, you speak with such confidence. And when you look at Rappi today, it's such an incredible business. And it's, as you said, 9 countries. When you look back and when you think today as a leader, do you ever struggle with self-doubt when you're thinking, fuck, we're competing with Uber. It is a capital-intensive business to run. Do you just struggle with self-doubt on a more personal leadership level?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in terms of the other guys, I don't. Because for Latin Americans, like we had a culture that we always were thinking that Americans or Asians or everyone was smarter people. But when we went to California and we worked with other YC teams, these guys were amazing, but our Mexican, Colombian engineers are at the same level as Silicon Valley guys, and the talent is there. It was a lack of mindset and a lack of believing that we could build a world-class company. And Mercado Libre has shown valuation of $100 billion. It has shown that in Latin America, there's going to be a lot of other $100 billion companies. So you have the talent. We've removed these glass ceilings of what Latin Americans can accomplish. So as a team, I think that we can compete head to head with all of these other amazing guys with the advantage that we are local and we understand that something like Rappi Cash is amazing for our users. And that's something that now after 5 years of we launching this, Uber is starting to talk about that idea. So I think being local is super important. Then it comes to the more personal doubts and that, well, for sure, like I had another company before and another before, and I had managed 300 people, but now I'm managing a team of 4,000 people, 150,000 couriers in the region. It's a challenge that, of course, I wasn't ready for it. So how do you compensate for the lack of experience getting to work and reading and asking for feedback and understanding that you're going to have to evolve as fast as your company? And that's an amazing challenge. Not an easy one, but an amazing one.
And one that you've clearly embraced so well. You mentioned the team there. And this again was one from Annie, but she said, what are the biggest challenges of scaling a startup in LATAM? And like, you've been very successful in getting incredible seasoned operators into the business. How do you get really successful seasoned operators to move to LATAM and work with Rappi?
The honest answer is purpose, impact, the opportunity to build something larger than all of us. And if you compare this business with the same business in other parts of the world, with the poverty and opportunities in Latin America, it's tangible impact what we're creating. And missionaries love that. So you have to convince people that are smarter than you to come to work with you. And I find that really hard. Why does someone that is smarter than me will come to work with me? And the answer is they don't come to work for me. They come to work for a mission and for a purpose that is larger than us. And Rappi is like this platform for amazing entrepreneurs to be able to explode everything they have inside them. And it's run like a pack of entrepreneurs. We're a very horizontal structure and we're very honest. We're all, or most of us, are partners and stockholders. So I think it's a great culture. It's not for everyone. It looks a lot more like Amazon than Google. It's super long hours, hard work, and we love it, but there's no massages and ping pong tables or whatever. We're very committed.
Okay, and final one. You mentioned there, like, no ping pong tables and, you know, no massages, etc. Anu told me as well that it's probably the most stressful job on the planet that you have. She asked, how do you deal with the stress? Like, what is your coping mechanism?
To be honest, I don't think about stress. I imagine that I'm stressed. I'm not going to tell you that I know how to manage stress, but I don't even think about stress because there's so much energy in the team and so much things to be done that the beauty of Rappi is that you forget about yourself. And honestly, I sometimes forget about even having lunch because we are just creating stuff or executing. And again, this is not for everyone. A normal human being that wants a bit more of balance in their life is not going to be super happy in Rappi. But as Jeff Bezos says, it's not about balance. You only have one life. It's about energy. And this job gives you a lot of energy. And if you have energy, even if you only have 1 hour for your family, you're going to make them laugh and you're going to hug them and you're going to be happy with them. So I think that's what we are trying to create here.
Listen, I'm totally with you in terms of the energy and it's great. I can feel the energy through Zoom. So I love it. I want to move into my favorite though, which is a quick fire round. So I essentially say a short statement and then you give me your immediate thoughts. Does that sound okay?
Perfect.
Okay. So what's the favorite book for you and why, Simon?
The Prosperity Paradox, that shows how via innovation you can take countries out of poverty. That's our real passion.
What's the hardest element of your role with Rappi today?
The hardest part is to not ever get comfortable as a boss or a leader. You can spend a lot of time just asking people to report things to you and to be able to always start your day with the difficult things, with the uncomfortable things, with the things that you don't want to do day after day after day. I think that's the biggest challenge.
How did you respond to your greatest failure? When you failed at something, how did you respond and how did you pick yourself up?
I think that to be able to be successful in this type of jobs, you don't have to take yourself too seriously in a sense that you don't have to feel that proud of the things that you do well or that shameful of the things that you don't. You just have to have a bit of perspective and move on and learn and keep working. So to be honest, if you tell me what's your greatest accomplishment or your greatest failure, I wouldn't be able to respond. I'm not fixed in the past in that sense.
Okay, interesting one here. What traits would you most like your children to have?
Resilience, courage, determination, curiosity, sense of humor, empathy, spirituality, I would say.
Got it. No, love it. Which leader do you look up to and why, Simon?
Well, in terms of business leaders, for sure, Jeff Bezos. I think it's a super competitive industry, the one that Amazon is in. And I just read his new book, Invent and Wonder, and it's pure wisdom in every single page. So that guy is impressive. And then in terms of human beings, my grandma, she's someone that had 8 kids, and I've never heard her complain in all my life. It's amazing how she always have a smile to every single situation. And I've learned a lot from that. Like, there's no time in life to complain.
You can learn a lot from your grandmother. Final one though, and it's like, what do the next 5 years hold for you with Rappi? What does that look like?
The next 5 years for us are going to be about extending what we can offer our power users. So we are a lot more focused on our high frequency users than in competing for cheap burgers for users that only order because of a discount. We target users that have most of things in life, but they don't have time. And our real purpose is to give time back to people and to families. And to be able to do that, we are learning what else can we provide. And for example, we're now entering into pets and users are loving our services and assortment of pets. We're now going a lot deeper into all of the baby category, and we are going into fintech and banking. So in 5 years, Rappi is going to be this super app for people that don't have a lot of time and need help with a lot of things. And Rappi is going to be able to provide not only groceries and restaurants and pharmacy, but also everything for your pets, services, your credit cards and bank accounts. We launched last week in Mexico. We're launching in Brazil, and we had tens of thousands of people already in waiting list. So it's an opportunity to, with small incremental changes, improve people's lives. And again, keep working on those retention cohorts and build this fan base. Rappi is not going to be the largest company in terms of number of users. It's going to be the largest company in terms of strong fan base. And what we're seeing is that 70% of our GMV comes from these users that really understand Rappi. And that's where we're focusing.
Simon, this has been such a joy to do. As you can tell, I totally threw the schedule out of the window. Unbelievably, my first guest from LATAM in 2000 shows. I'm so glad that we could do this because it was a very special one for me. So thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Harry.
I mean, as you could tell, I just love that discussion with Simon. And all I'll say is if you saw the schedule beforehand and then heard that episode, you would see that Simon was, incredibly accommodating in terms of satiating my curiosity there. If you'd like to see more from us behind the scenes, of course you can on Instagram at hstebbings1996 with two Bs. I always love to see you there. But before we leave you today, did you know that more than 80% of US public stock is owned by just 10% of Americans? This divide is even greater in the private markets. Carta makes it as easy to issue equity to your employees as it is to issue payroll, and for employees, as easy to accept it too. More than 16,000 companies issue equity to their employees through Carta. Whether you're just getting started or getting ready to go public, the team at Carta can help. Check them out at carta.com. And then another incredible product you have to introduce is SecureFrame. SecureFrame helps companies get enterprise ready by streamlining SOC 2 and ISO 27001 compliance. SecureFrame allows companies to get compliant within weeks rather than the painful months that is today. Join companies like Stream, Hasura, Benepass, and unlock more sales with SecureFrame. And 20VC listeners get 10% off at SecureFrame.com/20VC. And finally, I've always been a big history fan, and so I want to talk about Cooley, the global law firm built around startups and venture capital. Since forming the very first venture fund in Silicon Valley, Cooley's formed more venture capital funds than any other law firm in the world, with 50 plus years working with VCs. They help VCs form and manage funds, make investments, and handle the myriad of issues that arise throughout a fund's lifetime. So to learn more about the number one most active law firm representing VC-backed companies going public, head over to Cooley.com and also check out CooleyGo.com. As always, I so appreciate all your support, and I can't wait to bring you an incredible set of episodes next week. Stay tuned.